Okay. These calls, we do these calls every 2 weeks. We've had a break for the holidays, but we're an organization called HMTRI, Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute, and we're under a cooperative agreement with EPA. Someone just joined?
Tim Wiggers from Pahrump, Nevada.
Hey, Tim. Okay. Tim, we got two Nevada people. Good, good. We've got Julie also from Nye County.
So, hello.
Okay, great.
Yeah. We work with EPA. We've worked with them since the beginning of brownfield. And we don't provide EPA policy, and we don't speak for EPA, but we've been with these programs since the beginning. And our mission is basically to help existing grantees tune up their programs and make them as efficient as possible. In that light, we have an annual meeting, and we have some webinars, and these calls are kind of an extension of the annual meeting we have every year of our grantees. And at those meetings and at these PLCs, professional learning communities, we talk about the different issues that are required to make a good, sustainable program. Someone just joined?
Hi, yes, this is Lorena with the City of Detroit.
Okay, good Detroit. Okay, good to hear someone who may have worse weather than we have. So for existing grantees, these calls are to basically tune up our program. Someone just joined?
Hi, this is Robert Tan, EPA Region 10.
Okay, great. Hey, Robert, how are you?
Doing all right, thanks.
Good. We're just getting started, and some people are joining, so we'd like to hear where everyone's from so we can have some discussion. Someone else just joined?
Happy New Year. This is Ann from Memphis Bioworks.
Hey, Ann. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good. We're going to talk about curriculum today. I was just saying, while we don't speak for EPA policy-wise or any other way, we've been with these programs since they started. And our mission for current grantees is to help them tune up their program like Ann's and also to use them as mentors for potential grantees or new grantees that may want to look at these issues. Coincidentally, we are also in the midst of requests for proposals for the new program, the FY15 program. And we've been discussing those components that are very important to those programs. So while we're not basically telling you how to write your grant or how you should write your grant, we basically touch on those aspects of job training that are very important. And you should probably consider if you're writing a proposal or developing a new program, whether it's for EPA funding or for some other type of funding, it's the things you have to consider. Each week we talk on different topics, and this week we're going to be talking about curriculum and student services, which kind of blend together and are similar. We always start out these programs, though, with news from Washington, and GLOW's under the weather, but GLOW, is there anything that you might want to provide us with in terms of hearing from Joe in the last couple of weeks?
Well, actually, I did email him this morning, so I have talked to him this morning, and he really didn't have a whole lot, but he did want me to remind everyone that if you plan to submit a proposal this year and you have never registered on grants.gov, that is the only way that they're going to be accepting proposals this year. So, and that's a process that takes a week or two, and I'm sure, Mike, you're going to be talking about it, but if you have not yet registered in grants.gov, I would highly recommend that you do that today, tomorrow, as soon as possible, because that February deadline is going to be coming up before you know it. The other thing that he wanted me to tell everybody about, which is something that I posted to our listserv this morning, is Region 4 is having a webinar today for prospective applicants, and I have a feeling that it's going to be similar to the one that Joe did in December, where they go through the RFP step by step and just talk more about it. I think this is going to be a repeat of that, although I'm not positive, but it unfortunately started at the same time as this conference call did at 1 o'clock Central Time, but it is a 2-hour webinar, so when we're done with this conference call, there would still be plenty of time if you wanted to join in on their webinar. To do that, the phone number is 866-299-3188. And then once you get in, the code for that conference is 404-562-9966. So that would be another resource for you if you plan to submit a proposal this year.
Great.
And that was all I had, Mike.
Okay. We'll include a few other things in our post-session notes, which we'll send to everybody. If you've got a notice about this meeting or this conference call in our PLCs, you'll get the post-session notes. If you didn't, just email me your contact information, msenew@aol.com, msenew@aol.com. But we'll send you some things that Joe has mentioned over a period of time, like the 21st Century Conservation Corps, environmental justice opportunities, but we'll put those in the post-session notes and you'll get them in the next couple of days. Well, one of the things, and Guy is not on the call today, but I would like to thank him for some of the comments he made after last session. The last session we talked about assessment, primarily labor market assessment, which is going to be really important when you start developing your proposals. Labor market assessment and the reason for it really leads into the items we're going to be talking about today and then 2 weeks from today. It leads into your training program and it leads into your student services and then, of course, it leads into your recruitment, retention, and placement. Today we're going to talk about the natural follow-on to your labor market assessment, which is training and how you're going to train and what you're going to train. And the thing about what Guy commented, and I'll put them in the post-session notes, his comments to me. We talked about wastewater, and it's an up-and-coming area of interest. But Guy cautioned that wastewater operators are highly trained and licensed, and they require passing several tests to get that licensure. Often people who have worked there for a long time or are engineers might get that operator's license, but he said the likelihood of someone coming out of our program and going right into a wastewater treatment operator is fairly low. But then, on the other hand, it can get you into the door. It can get you into the program where there might be a few wastewater operators on a large plant, but many, many, 10 to 1 of other types of people are working in the plant. And they're doing maintenance. And there's stormwater management, meter reading, equipment maintenance, erosion management. So water and wastewater is a lot kind of like RRP. While you need someone who is highly licensed, there are other people that work on those jobs. So when you're looking at water, wastewater, you have to be real careful to make sure that there's an entry point. And we recommend that anyone that's going to include water, wastewater as their prime training, make sure you've already contacted the municipal water plants, the private water plants, the city, to see if there's a path for them and what kind of path that would be. So your graduates, when you're training them, if you say, we think there's a need because there's a lot of programs and a lot of papers have come out about the big need of retiring wastewater treatment plant operators, and there's a huge demand coming up because a lot of them retired in the 70s. But on the same token, the pathway into those jobs is questionable. You may develop a relationship with the municipal plant, and they'll take all your graduates and bring them right into the plant as trainees, or there may be a closed system. And so you want to, before you jump into that, you want to be a little careful. It's not that it's closed, but it's something you have to make sure you do this. Now, what's important, and in the RFP, you would see that there are basically six areas that they want you to train in. And, of course, these are related to the people who are sponsoring the program. The new one is the insecticide, fungicide, and rodenticide people. These are the pest management people. This is new to this year. But the rest are fairly traditional water, wastewater, chemical awareness, solid waste, and all of those that are indicated in the RFP. You don't, if you do a labor market assessment and you find that there are a lot of jobs in an area that's not included, you need to proceed with caution because this is just our opinion, but for example, air is not involved in this program right now. You may find that there are some jobs in air, and you may want to do some training in air, but you're going to have to be careful because it's really not in that list. All the others, many of the others are. It would be good if you train someone and then they were placed in an air position because of the training you gave them. But on the other hand, if your primary curriculum was based on air, it's not what you should be doing. They ask you in the curriculum part of this to demonstrate what you're going to be doing primarily in terms of your training, and then what other courses you're going to be doing awareness. And you need to keep in mind on any training program, all of your graduates, rarely are they going to all go to work for the same person or in the same field. We've had exceptions to that. We've had people in East Palo Alto, for example, many years ago, where the manufacturer said, we'll take everyone you graduate. And we've had several people say this. They like their graduates. They have a large demand for people. And they said, we'll just take everyone you can graduate. Then it's really important to find out from that employer, what do you want us to train to? And if those are areas that are consistent with what EPA is asking you to train for, it's something that you want to link your needs assessment to your training program, and you want to have that as your primary training curriculum. But for many people, and those demands change. One of our grantees have always said that over the years, every year is a different demand. It's not the same every year. So one year there may be a need for RRP people that are doing renovation, repair, and lead abatement. The next year, not. Maybe there's something in terms of underground storage tanks, or maybe they're this year.
Hey, Danny, speak to Tom Quinn, please.
Okay, I think we've got someone
on the
line.
Are you familiar with the outreach that he made to us at FSCJ here in Jacksonville for a room?
Is this regarding the
The
EPA program? Okay, someone must. Someone must be online that I'm not sure about the question. Is that a question regarding the environmental job training program?
No. I think it was a side conversation.
Good afternoon, Tom Quinn. This is Jorge Gutierrez of FSCJ here in Jacksonville.
Okay.
I finally have an answer for you. We can get you a room. Won't cost you anything. If you could, give me a call back.
Oh. 904-633.
I think maybe he just needs to mute his phone, Mike.
Okay. Let's go on.
I don't think that gentleman is talking to us. I think he's just needing to mute his phone.
Okay, that's good. I was trying to think, how does that relate to our program? Well, let's go on, and if we have more problems, we'll mute that. So one of the things that Guy Zazak, in fact, he sounded a little like Guy, he said, what's the most important thing in developing your program is find out what your employers want. Find out who they want. And when you write, if you're going to write a proposal or you're tuning up your current grant, you want to make sure that you link that needs assessment, what your employers want is your needs assessment. You link that to curriculum. And what you really need to do is address in your needs assessment that you're linking, that you find that there's a huge need. If you're a newer community, you may not have RRP needs. You may not need lead renovation. You may not have things that were built before 1987. You may not have asbestos issues. You may have some other issue. You may have underground storage tanks, or you may have some chemical issues. You may have fracking going on, and you've got some emergency and spill response issues. You want to be able to link and demonstrate in your program plan that you've done this needs assessment, and it's demonstrating that you've got this large demand for this particular curriculum, and that would be one of your major curriculum. But as I was saying, it changes from year to year, and it may even change during your program. So you don't want to be a one-trick pony. You want to have curriculum in other areas that will also have potential large demand. For example, pest management, or it might be something in phytoremediation because you've got someone, a consultant that's working heavily in that area, or it may be lead and asbestos. So you want to have a broad range of training programs that will place people, whether it's in mold or pest control or recycling, emergency response. You want to have them be able to do all those things, even though your needs assessment points as a huge demand in one area, but there is some other demand in these others. And it's really important, as I said, to try to link that needs assessment to your curriculum. I really like, and this gentleman was from Jacksonville, and the reason I was interested in what he was saying is I think one of our best programs, and I'm going to put these in the notes, is the program in Jacksonville, State College of Florida, Jacksonville. They have an excellent training program. In my opinion, it's one of the most comprehensive, and it's one of the most innovative, and I'm going to, again, I'll put these in the notes. They go through all of the curriculum that is relevant to Florida, that part of Florida, and they have issues regarding stormwater and erosion and sediment, so they have a lot of emphasis on that. They have a lot of water, wastewater training because they have that. They have emergency response issues, so they treat that. They have a lot of deconstruction and solid waste, so they're big on that. But they have a lot of certifications. But they've been able to link their needs to their curriculum. The other interesting thing about Florida, Jacksonville, is in delivery. And when you consider how you're going to deliver your program, they deliver on tablets. They don't use text. And they've been able to get almost all of their curriculum in PDF format, which they put on tablets. And they give all the students a tablet. And then when they graduate, they let them keep them for reference. And they're spending under $100 a tablet, which is a lot less than their printed curriculum would have cost them. So, and that was approved by EPA as a delivery method. And they've had big success with it. And they use it as a means of communication between each other. That gets into your retention issues of how do you keep your students coming to class. And, of course, most people will say it's more about personal issues than it is about anything else. It's about building this team of people who they want to come to class because they like the other people that are there, and they bonded with the program. And the Florida State uses a lot of emails, a lot have clubs, a lot of them meet outside of class informally to just hang out together. There are some programs like those in Alaska that actually bring people in for to live. They're able to secure stipends from a third party to bring people in because people are all over Alaska. They bring them in, and this would be something similar to what you might do in Nye County. They're able to get people to fund people to come in to a central location and spend a couple of weeks with heavy training, and they deliver. They simulate the working day, 40 hours a week. They do intensive training. Then they let them go home, and then they come back again. But these people develop, the participants in the class develop a camaraderie, and they're a team, and they help each other, and they stay together even after they graduate. One of the things that every program is going to have a different format. Some people like to go evenings, because their students are working part-time during the day. Some people like to simulate the 40-hour work week. And most of our grantees, and this would go for example, in youth build programs, you might go 40 hours a week to simulate what it would be like working. And it has a life skills component. But they'll go intensive, and they might go for depending on how many hours their program are, they might go for 3 months. And others, as I said, would go evenings. Some would go 3 days a week, and it would be a longer program. And that all depends, again, on your needs assessment, not only of the employers, but the needs assessment of the students. Are your students that you're going to be recruiting, and this will tie into your recruitment placement, are the students you're recruiting working part-time? And if they've got some kind of jobs, they may not be able to go to an intensive program like this. Certainly, it's going to exclude a lot of people if you go 40 hours a week and simulate the work week. They're going to have to be totally dedicated to the program. That may be a good thing, or it may not work in your community, but it will make a difference on retention of your students. Other things that are going to be important in terms of retention of your students will be those issues that are not funded by EPA, the life skills components, the things that grant personnel don't get paid for but find they have to do. There are things like transportation, working out daycare, working with the courts. Out in California, we when we talked about what they're doing in out in California, we find that they're going to court to either expunge or remove tickets or stand up for some of their students so they can continue going to class. We've had project officers who have actually gone to students' homes because there was an issue in the family. Those are all the things that will keep a student in your program and keep your retention rates high. Many of these can be funded through the WIB, and we've talked about this in some of our other programs on what the WIB can supply for you, and it's very important that whatever you're doing at this point, and if you're writing a grant or a proposal, you really need to contact the Workforce Investment Board, because in terms of retaining your students, it's extremely important to get them any supplemental assistance you can, and that is primarily going to be through the Workforce Investment Board. So, but Anne, over in Memphis, what kind of classes have you found the most successful in your training?
Hi, Mike. I'm sorry, I had it on mute.
That's okay. You've run a pretty successful program, and have you experimented with how you deliver your classes, whether you go evenings or concentrated?
We mimic the work schedule, so our students have to be available Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. To be able to attend classes. So we're focusing on the unemployed and underemployed. Mm-hmm. So those students who are underemployed would need the flexibility to be able to, you know, work evenings.
Right.
So that they could attend training during the daytime hours. Mm-hmm. And that has worked really well for our community.
That makes a lot of sense, because you basically defined your target group, and these are going to people who are going to have to really dedicate themselves to your program.
Right. We want to ensure that, you know, they are work ready, which mm-hmm. means that, you know, if they're able to complete our program, and our completion rate was at 95%, that's a good indicator that they will be able to go to work and maintain employment.
So, that's really impressive. Have you done anything special in terms of retention, of how you keep your students interested in your curriculum?
Well, we do a lot of hand-holding. mm-hmm. We do a lot of hand-holding here. We partner, you know, with WIN to come in during the orientation at the very beginning and do a career prep workshop and, you know, share with them all the array of services and support that they have to help them, you know, post-training. And once they complete training, we developed an environmental job club program to help keep them engaged. And we meet weekly with those who don't, land jobs right away to continue that dialogue and to, you know, discuss successes, barriers, make sure they're actively engaged in their job search, have them to tell us, you know, what type of job search activities they're engaged in, what companies did you apply with, what are the responses you're getting, what kind of follow-up you're doing. So we just, you know, kind of help to guide them through that process very closely to ensure that they follow through.
It sounds like, and we've heard this before, that sometimes the easiest part of this whole program is the training, the curriculum. It's everything before, during, and after in terms of the interpersonal relationships and getting the right students and
right.
then getting them to stay and then getting them placed and keeping them in touch.
Right, and, right. We try to set the expectation on the front end by requiring all of our applicants to attend an information session. The session is about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending upon, you know, how many questions we have. But that's a prerequisite before we issue any applications to the students. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of, you know, sets the tone for our entry into the program. And it has proven to be very, you know, successful.
Have you found a particular go-to curriculum that, of course, everyone has to teach HAZWOPR 19-10-120 and usually
right.
general construction and first aid. Is there another course you find fairly popular that is a go-to?
Well, we, you know, cast a wide net, you know, in response to your comment about, you know, ensuring that, you know, there's a broad range of offerings so that we can have a broad range of employment opportunities for students. We know we're not going to be able to place 25 students, not in our market, you know, in environmental technician jobs or asbestos specialist positions. And so we kind of cast a wide net and also leverage as part of the process. We look at their resumes and their job history, you know, coming in and try and leverage that as well in our job placement efforts. And we work very closely with the Employee Advisory Committee, but we had a lot of success last year with forklift operators as part of the curriculum that we offered, because Memphis is a distribution center for forklift operators. And so we were able to offer that training. And for the students who took advantage of that, we didn't, you know, have a problem placing them. And then for the students who did not, we targeted advanced manufacturing companies, of which we have quite a few in our market. And they were, you know, very interested in that skill set from students from our class.
The Ann did exactly what EPA is looking for in terms of your proposals. They've done this needs assessment, and the needs assessment isn't going to county records or getting numbers. Needs assessment is, and you really need to show how to demonstrate that in any proposal you write. But it's finding out who's hiring and what kind of jobs is it going to be. And in her case, she saw in their community these strong industries were looking for people, and given the environmental certifications that she's providing and the life skills and the training, it's enough to put them at the front of the line in terms of the hiring. Because they've had 19-10-120, they're there. They can deal with hazardous materials. Or because they've got a confined space certificate or even first aid, they have credentials that 99% of all the other applicants don't have. And so they're going to look at your people first. And
right. One of the things, I'm sorry, Mike.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add that one of the things that we've added this year is wastewater treatment awareness class. We're partnering with the City of Memphis Wastewater Treatment Manager, who's going to teach the course. initially when we, you know, when we reached out to him, we wanted to see what the career path was for entry into that field. And, you know, unless our students are degreed and, you know, there are a lot of prerequisites that they require to get, you know, to get on with them and get them hired. But he saw it, you know, and we kind of, you know, helped him to see it as an opportunity to expose students who may not necessarily consider wastewater treatment operators as, you know, as an industry to, you know, to seek out for employment. And so he discussed it with his boss, and they thought this would be a good opportunity to, you know, kind of get some exposure. And so the course is going to offer a tour of their facility, and he's very interested in hiring some of our students who have degrees. We, in our last program, because the unemployment rate here was so high, we had a significant number of students who had degrees in the sciences, in chemistry, biology, and math, you know, some of those areas. So he was really interested in some of those graduates, but they were able to find jobs.
Well, that's excellent, because one thing is there's paths, as Guy had said last week in his note, there's the wastewater operator, and there's going to be a huge demand for those, but it's difficult to get those certifications,
right,
and you almost
right.
need a college degree, or you need to be really sharp and get a lot of experience and work your way up. The original people were basically people who worked their way up.
Right.
Now it's kind of like the pilot of the airplane, but behind that pilot, there might be, you know, 50 other people that, again, your program could be an entryway. And Anne's doing another very smart thing that's very subtle. Get your employers to train your classes, because they're going to get to know the students, and they will hire your students because they've not only bonded with the program. It's a triple play. They bonded with your program. They're on your advisory committee almost de facto. They could write you letters of support, and they could hire your students, and they could do your training. So it is really, that is an awesome approach that you're using. And other people might think of going around to employers and asking, and most employers are flattered to, then they don't have to teach the whole course, but if they can participate in the course, and then you ask them to be on your advisory committee, and then, and as I say, it's two-way. They're looking for good people all the time. And if they could spend some class time with your students, it won't take them long to know, I want that guy, because he's
right.
really sharp, and he's training material. So I think that's a very good piece of advice for new grantees and for people who are thinking of starting these programs when they look at trainers. Well, you know, these things are just so short. We do want you to go on this other call if you're interested. Galo, do you want to repeat those numbers, or should I? Okay.
I had my phone muted
okay.
in case I was
okay.
talking.
Do you want me to read them, and then you could correct me if I'm wrong? The phone number.
No, I got them.
Okay.
The phone number is 866-299-3188, and the code then, once you get that phone number dialed, is 404-562-9966. And this is for Region 4's webinar for prospective applicants that's going on right now. It has been going for about a half an hour, but they've got about an hour and a half left. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that this first half an hour would just be covering background information, so it's not too late to join in now.
That'd be great. And we're going to meet again in 2 weeks, so the 21st of January, and it'll be crunch time, but we're going to also talk about recruitment, retention, and placement, which we've begun to talk again about this time. Anne, thanks very much. You've been really helpful on this PLC today. And thanks, everybody, for attending. And we'll send out post-session
notes. Thank you, folks. Thanks for talking to you all.
Yeah, we'll
thank
send
you
some post-session notes and with some additional information.
Great.
So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you.